When it rains, it pours, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome along to this week's preview show. My name is Julian Roberts, and what's that? Another three-man panel for a preview show. That shows the sort of dire state we're in at the moment when everything feels like an emergency pod. Matt Caspel, how are you getting on?
Love an emergency pod, mate. I'm good.
Maybe less. It's not emergency, let's be honest, but I think there's enough that we want to have our say on. I was texting Tom Walker, how are you, mate, this morning, and we were both like, we are absolutely raging. Let's get on that preview show tonight.
I'm utterly fed up. can I tell you that much of a nothing? I'm utterly fed up of so many things. But what an 8 days.
It's getting better, isn't it? It's getting better.
Yeah. Honestly, like when you think you've seen everything, when your best player gets sent off, your manager leaves within about 15 hours, you then lose the derby, then Tuesday night happened, and says so much from that that just brought it to a whole new level. And sometimes I just want to thank Cambridge United because they really are groundbreaking in how they're trying to annoy people at the moment.
It's amazing the lows they'll steep to just to annoy us. Tom, let's start with you. It's worth saying that we're recording on a Wednesday night, which is, you know, abnormal for us to be recording a preview show on a Wednesday night. There's a few reasons for that, scheduling being one of them, a few other recording obligations that we've got. It does mean that there's no presser information. I think that's fine. I think this is less of a preview show of Bolton away and a bit more of a review show of Stevenage away, if you hadn't guessed, which was, as we were recording last night. Tom, your instant reactions from another 1-0 defeat to a local rival of sorts. What an evening.
I thought that was absolutely dire. Like, seriously bad stuff. I
properly lost my head last night.
I think, like, the context is obviously that we're a lot in disarray because of what's happened with the manager leaving, and that's out of a lot of people's control, unfortunately. But I mean, even with that, like, some of the performances individually, collectively as a team were just hopeless. I thought, like, the minimum you want if you're going to lose a derby, and I think what we described on Sunday is pretty flat fashion, just a bit of a response from the start. And whether it's for a lack of quality or a lack of application or just frankly a lack of giving a shit or giving enough of a shit. We're losing games hand over fist, not by being totally outplayed, but just by not being up for it enough, I think. I think the most worrying thing for me, and when we went into the game, we spoke with Matt, the Stevenage fan. The thing that came out of that was, like, Stevenage are, like, prepared to do a job on teams. They're like really Evans it up. They didn't have to do any of that. And that's the most frustrating thing. Like, Stevenage will look at that and they'll go, that was a pretty easy night in the office, really, all told, because we're beating a team who are, quite frankly, beating themselves at the moment. And, I guess the comparison I draw of it was just because of obvious things that I'm sure we'll also talk about, was just Euro 2016, you know, watching England at that tournament, because on and off the pitch, it was just a total shit show. Whether you're talking about players that either aren't performing, won't perform, just won't apply themselves in the way that you believe the badge deserves. And then for some fans, making a bit of a tit of themselves, one in particular. It was a bit of a mess, let's be honest, from start to finish. And that's, like, not even included when you get onto the context you're in Stevenage for the second time this season. They couldn't get the game on the first time. The second time, they couldn't get to start on time, which I must admit was quite funny at the time.
Because of everything, then we got kept in the ground for an extra 20 minutes.
So I've spent so much time in that football stadium this season for such little reward. And that partly is probably why I'm so annoyed.
I think it is a big part of it. Right, Tom, me and you were at the game last night. Caspel, you were not. You watched it on TV. So I
here
think you're
happy clapping in. Here he is. A bit of positivity, a bit of balance, please, Matthew.
I will say, and I'll come into you in a sec, Matt, but what I will say is I would consider me and Tom, I watch a lot of football with Tom, and despite what we often joke around, I'd say we're both pretty level-headed football fans. I think we both have. Sorry, Tom. Not at 5 p.m. on a Saturday.
There's a number of people on. There's a number of people on Twitter who would disagree with the assessment of Tom Walker.
I'll talk
I'm level-headed. I'm level-headed.
I think you are, mate. But anyway,
I'm articulate, mate.
Okay, look. I think I'm a pretty level-headed football fan. It's rare that I lose my rag so profoundly with a team. And last night, I properly lost my head. To the point where I threw a flare on the pitch in the 93rd minute.
Is that right? It was you?
No, obviously I didn't. For the record, obviously I didn't do that. We'll come on to that later. I really did lose my head with the team last night. And I think there was plenty of people around me. The reaction from that was, you know, it was pretty embarrassing, pathetic. Words of this nature, Caspel, for a team maybe, you know, on the face of it, 5 points... above the drop zone, plenty of teams between us and the line. You might look at it and go, it's a bit of an overreaction. Tell me, watching on the telly, what your perspective of the game was that is probably different to the reaction me and Tom have had.
I mean, firstly, why are we so shit on Tuesday nights? What's going on there? Sorry.
I've got stats.
Oh, you've got the data. Today.
Sorry, go thanks on, for man. Reminding me.
No, go on then.
I had a busy day, but I did have time to do this. Okay.
Sure.
So the last time we won on a Tuesday night, either of you, do you remember?
Oh, someone posted this, I think, is a while ago.
It can't Wickham be away.
Wickham away. Okay, the 3-2. Yeah,
25th
yeah.
of October, 2022. So we played Posh word. Four times since then.
I thought you were going to say Macclesfield away in a conference.
Yeah.
That's what it kind of feels like.
I thought Tom was going to answer in like 5 seconds ago.
Yeah.
It was Telford in 2007.
Telford in 2007, yeah, yeah. Actually, it was a true.
Barnet Macclesfield.
Yeah.
No, so since the start of last season... we've played on a Tuesday night, specifically a Tuesday, 16 times. We've won 1, drawn 3, and lost 12, home and away. Evening games, I went as far as all evening games, so any midweek, Monday to Friday evening game. Played 21, won 3, which is Wickham away, Exeter at home, and Reading at home both this season. Drawn 3, same 3, and lost 15. It is thin gruel when you're spending your weeknights watching Cambridge United at the moment. Continue. I don't know if there's any. Do you think there's anything in that? I don't think there is, but it is fucking demoralising, is what it is.
I guess we've just got to compare. You've got to. I mean, I don't know how much time you got tomorrow, but I guess we've got to compare that against all the other teams around us, and it's probably the same, isn't it? Do you know what I mean?
Right, you take Port Vale, I'll take Shrewsbury.
All right. Yeah. Back to your original question. How did I feel about the game? I do think when you're at home and watching on the TV, you are quite insulated from, I guess, almost like groupthink, if you know what I mean. So you're not looking around you. You're not in the cold. You haven't travelled. You haven't spent all the money, albeit obviously to Stevenage this season, I did travel and I did spend the money. So maybe that's no good. But this is not me coming out and saying I thought we played well. I thought it was a pretty, pretty poor performance. But I wasn't left with the sense at the end of this like huge sense of opprobrium around like this is like the, you know, people are talking about it like the world has ended. I thought it was just bad, just really bad. I thought, again, we mentioned it on the pod after Peterborough, but again, it was centre midfield seemed to be to me the main problem and a lot of bodies in there, but not a lot of football happening is what I would say. And just in terms of how we set up, it all just looked a bit like a mess. It looked like one of two things has happened, right? Either the roles were well-defined and the players just haven't been able to do it. And it's worth bearing in mind, there is 11 blokes playing against you, trying to stop you doing what you're trying to do. Don't think that was really what happened, though. The other thing is just, were we that well set up? I don't think necessarily we were. Like, it's almost square pegs, round holes. Like having more and more and more centre midfielders doesn't seem to be helping anything, I would say. The only thing you would say for us is we were reasonably solid in the middle, but I guess maybe we weren't. It just felt like Stevenage ran round the outside of us. And also, I felt a bit, I mean, it's one of these interesting things. I'm interested in both of your takes on, I guess, fullbacks, because I've seen Danny Andrew and Gibbons both getting quite a few pelters today. And I just think if no one is shown for the ball in centre midfield, their only real option they had available to them, given their sort of their strengths and their weaknesses, whatever that is maybe to try and roll it to Macaulay Bond's feet, and he's having to drop like right into flanks to pick the ball up. We shouldn't really, if you're a lone striker, I just don't think that's really how it should all be working. So I think the fullbacks have had a hard time because there's been no one to give the ball to, basically. So I'm interested in your perspective on that as well, because that seems to be, it's like a TV opinion versus a in the ground opinion, if you know what I mean. The other one, this is going to blow particularly Tom's mind, and I'm not saying it's pushes buttons either, but until
Jordan Cousins is player of the season.
Until Jordan Cousins mooted by some to be player of the season on Twitter, which is an interesting hill to die on. He'd been pretty flawless and faultless up until being the absolute opposite. So I actually thought he was one of our better players and had been breaking up the play well and actually been using the ball quite well. Like, sounds pretty fundamental, but he was passing the ball to players that play for Cambridge United, and that is more than you can say for maybe Paul Digby and maybe Adam May. Obviously, we're going to get onto the moment, I suspect, and Tom will probably have his piece. But I mean, really, it's a poor performance. Stevenage are obviously a decent side, but I think someone pointed out on the message board today, we've lost in the last few weeks now to a Bolton team that were pretty patchy on form, Peterborough, who are bang out of form, Stevenage, who are right next to us in the form table until before last night.
And whose home form in particular isn't very good, by the way.
I know they're good sides, and they were obviously, I'm not saying we should be going there and, you know, you're like, oh, I'm, you know, 7 points, 6 points. But realistically, with their form, you know, we're not, I just don't think we're shit, or certainly as poor as we played and we have been playing in these games. So it's a bit of frustration of why can't we, at least for periods, do a game like match these teams. Again, we spoke after the Peterborough game about not really having any moments, at least as Stevenage. I guess we had, what, a 6 or 7 minute spell of creating half chances and or entering the third of their pitch, but it wasn't a huge amount to get excited about. So, yeah, pretty somber evening. But I guess when you're at home, one of the other great benefits is as soon as that full-time whistle goes, you just shut laptop and just get on with your life. And yeah, you've got to compartmentalize these things, I guess. Whereas you guys obviously then have to travel home and you vent and
still
there's a load of like
Stevenage. Yeah.
You didn't sort of leave the stream running for about 15 minutes before you were allowed yourself to turn it off.
Sat on the sofa, wasn't allowed to move for 15 minutes.
That's it. Well, obviously, like before the game, I turned all the lights off in the room just to pick up where we left off. So
I've got to say, there was a hilarious moment. I think the game was just about to kick off. And I know that it obviously turned out to be completely routine, but like the lights in the stands go off. And
yeah.
They went off around the ground one by one.
One by one.
Like, bang, bang, bang. Like, hang on. Right, there's a lot to unpick from how you've just summarised that, Caspel. Not unfairly, I think. I think let's start with the shape, the question of the shape, and this question about the fullbacks. And I think it comes down to a shape thing, because I think pretty early on it was obvious that Kaikai and Lancaster were not playing as wingers and were playing as 10s in behind a striker. Really bunched in. And sort of May and Digby, either side of Cousins, were almost acting as like covering. Defensively, they were sort of acting as like covering either side, is what it looked like to me.
Yeah.
But I thought Stevenage had the run of us instantly. The way they were able to switch balls, they had a man free either flank straight away. And I think it was pretty clear to see. I don't want to sit here and I don't want Barry Cord to be the subject of our ire this evening, because I think he's been given a complete hospital pass the last couple of weeks. It feels like a fucking lifetime. So that's my thing. And then the thing is, when you get the ball, I don't think, despite the fact that we had three centre mids and supposedly two tens playing, not a single person seemed to be showing for the ball at any point. So I actually felt sorry for Gibbons and Andrew when they had the ball at their feet, and Macaulay Bond, because I'm not sure what he's supposed to do. The ball gets launched to him. He won a few flicks. I'm just not sure what he's supposed to do with it. I'm not sure, like, there's no one in around him. It didn't seem like we had any sort of intent or plan to attack the game. Tom, did you see it any differently to that?
Not really, no. I think he summed it up pretty well. I think the point that Caspel made there is, or just before, was good, which is that, like, I think a few of the players that have come in for, like, a lot of stick, I'm thinking particularly the fullbacks and Bond, are the ones that it's like, yeah, all right, like the performances don't look great, but it would be very difficult for them to kind of come out of it with credit, because they would have had to put in, like, realistically, like you're talking about, they'd have had to put in like 10 out of 10 performances to put in.
It's exactly what I said. Yeah. It's exactly what I said in the prediction, right? On the pod we did before the Stevenage game, I was like, one of the things I said was Macaulay Bonner will be made to look really shit. And I'm not, so the jury's obviously out on him. He's not done enough yet to prove anything. But I said he'll get isolated and he'll just be made to look hopeless, and he's going to get all this flack, if you know what I mean, which just feels like it's just a bit basic. It's a bit rudimentary, really. Like, Fajiri, let's say, would have looked identical. I think he would have been identical. Equally but as like...
By the way, he has. It reminded me of like spells at like do you remember at Burton, I think it was, earlier in the season when we set up similarly and you've just got a really isolated Fajiri at Derby as well, even though we got a good point there that day. It's quite easy to leave it. You know, it doesn't really matter who it is. If you don't get anyone in around him, what's he supposed to do?
I think the one thing that maybe validates a bit of the criticism of those, particularly those players and particularly the fullbacks, is I think, well, not necessarily so much in a defensive sense, but certainly in an attacking sense, I think Bennett came on and did really, really well and was probably a man of the match, I think. I think it's probably not a massive shout. No. But yeah, like... It wasn't surprising to me that we struggled to create anything, because, you know, the ball gets passed or won back by one of the two centre-backs, particularly Morris, and I thought had a pretty good evening as well. And, like, we're not talking, like, the full-backs are picking it up in, like, really advanced areas. Like, they're picking it up, like, probably 15, 20, 25 yards inside their own half. And literally the option is run up the channel, and then run up the channel for a bit, and then all of a sudden there's three Stevenage players around them with no amber shirt around them. It can't be a surprise that wasn't yielding chances. Bon up front on his own against, you know, a centre-half like Pierre Gianni, there's ways to play that. Pardon me. The way we played it wasn't the way to play that. And, like, what you're left with is just us kind of lumping it forward towards Bon, who looked, as expected in a situation like that, very, very incapable of dominating that battle. And then what you're asking for, I would presume, is your midfield, particularly your centre mid, to try and create something. Well, probably been asking that for quite a few weeks now. And frankly, the players that are in there either aren't good enough, aren't showing enough, or just aren't trying hard enough. And the end result is that the midfield, which I think we can talk about the setup as much as we like and what it does to the fullbacks and the centre forward, but I think the entire problem is the midfield. It's an absolute wasteland, to be frank. And, you know, I talked right at the start about how I don't really think we made Stevenage play well to win the game or make them work hard enough for it. And I think, like, the biggest difference, like, the most stark thing, and, like, we've talked about this, like, week after week after week now, which is why it's so frustrating, but, like, it's how slow everything is. Like, and Stevenage just made, like, put it into stark contrast, because whether it's getting the ball from back to front or whether it's getting the ball from side to side, everything's just so quick. They know where somebody is. Like, if I pick up the ball here, I know I'm going to have a teammate here, so I can just move it almost without looking. They were doing that so much. And, like, part of that is just having a coach and a structure in place. And part of that is just having, like, the wherewithal about you just to pick your head up and fucking pass the ball quickly rather than taking 3, 4, 5 touches on it or losing the ball in some people's case. It's so poor at the moment. It lacks quality. It lacks application. It lacks all the intangibles that kind of have got us to where we are. And it all just looks like a bit of a mess, to be honest. And look, the one thing that I think unanimously everyone can agree on, I'm sure there's some things that people will disagree on within what we've said already, but, like, you come out of that ground and you think, my God, we need to pull a rabbit out of the hat with this managerial appointment, because we need someone who can get these players into gear. Because all of a sudden, like, even though the results were sort of pretty favourable to us on the evening, and actually the relegation picture hasn't really changed that much despite, the run of results we've had of late, like, it looks pretty ominous at the moment. You're thinking of teams below us who look a lot better than us, your Cheltenhams, your Charltons, probably can include Reading in that as well. And I know that most fans of a lot of clubs will start to do this when you have a bit of poor form, but, like, you do start to wonder where the next points are coming from, because I think we've kind of looked at the run of this four games, which you play Bolton twice, Posh and Stevenage away. And I think unanimously as a fan base, we wrote them off at the start, which is weird, I think. There's games to be getting points out of there. They're difficult games. They're not easy fixtures, but there's games to be getting points out of. And then we've gone, all right, so we'll get through those four and then we'll just win two or three next. Like, the games aren't, all right, on paper as difficult as these. But you're still going to Lincoln, who are doing really well at the moment. You're still playing a Northampton team who are comfortably better than us in the away game. Like, these games start to look really hard. So, yeah, it's hard to take many positives from last night, I think, at all. And the setup is obviously just one in a number of things that were, frankly, nowhere near the right level.
It's funny, isn't it, that, like, I think that the biggest piece of context that people are missing, and I'm not saying this is all doom and gloom, but I think there are some people who are maybe a little bit head in the sand for the sort of precarious, more precarious position we're actually in relegation-wise than maybe what the league table suggests, is that run of fixtures. Because people go, oh, well, look, you know, Northampton at home in a couple of weeks. That's like, yeah, sure, it's a better fixture than Posh, but that's 11th place, Northampton, who've got, you know, 10 more points than us. Lincoln have won 5 out of their last 6 away. Reading have got one of the best home forms in the league after that away. And it's a proper ding-dong down the bottom. It's like, these aren't... you start to look at that performance last night and then look at your fixture list, and it's just... It starts to become, like, so worrying. Kasper, I don't want to go any further without talking about the goal.
Are you going to come to me? You know what? I'll just look
at
it
to you, because Tom will have a say in a second. Anyway.
Hospital passes all over. But Tom will probably butt in the next 30 seconds, I reckon. He won't be able to control himself. you know what I was looking at there in centre midterms? I just worked out we've changed that centre mid department 5 games in a row now.
That's interesting.
Which is mad, isn't it? And I was just thinking, like, sort of try and be constructive as a pod, right? Like, what do you actually do next? But it feels like, without being too negative, like, we've kind of tried almost every single, like, perceivable combination of what you might go and do with it. So the goal, it's not all Jordan Cousins, I will say. We certainly failed to clear our lines. We failed to do a lot. We let the ball scud around the box a bit. They had a shot. The clearance isn't very good. I'm actually not sure who that was.
Gibbons, I think.
But you, like, do you know what I mean? If you're clearing it off the sort of 6-yard box and you're only rolling it along the ground to outside the box, something's also gone wrong there.
Yeah, this is all true.
But yeah, look, I mean, it's just it's a fundamental problem. You just can't, there's just right and wrong places. Like, if you're going to lose the ball on a football pitch, that might be almost as bad a place as you can simply possibly lose the ball.
Almost exactly the same place he lost the ball against Cheltenham, if my memory serves me.
And it's becoming
loads of times on Saturday.
Yeah, it's becoming a bit of an unfortunate thing, I guess. How to draw any kind of positive out of it? I mean, the alternative is that he's just smashing the ball off the side for a throw, which definitely is the right thing to do in that situation. In hindsight, obviously, it's frustrating because you want to see a player of his, I'll say, apparent caliber, like, given 200 games in the Championship, if he can control the ball there, roll round his man, you know, use his body to roll a guy, and then he's emerged with the ball, you'd be like, oh, that's fantastic. That's literally, like, that's A+ in terms of ability and skill and reading in the game. You know, they talk a lot at high level football about scanning, like, you're supposed to look around your shoulder, you're supposed to know who's roughly where, you know, where everyone is, so that you know if you can actually pull that kind of move off. Feels like he hasn't done that. Feels like, in terms of football IQ, it's a pretty low percentage thing that has happened. And Tom's right, to be fair. It's a mistake that he's made a few more times that hasn't always led to a goal. But if you make that mistake over and over again in those sort of dangerous departments, then you just bet, you know, at some point it's bound to start coming against you. And I'm afraid in the last 3 or 4 weeks, it's definitely, from the top of my head, happened, I think, 3 times now. And some people are sort of glossing over it a bit, but I think it's happened, what, twice in one goal defeats? Like, it's actually really, really harmful, I'm afraid. And it's brutal because, obviously, like, the further back you play on the football pitch, the more punishing, when you make a mistake, the more critical it is, right? So the closer you are to your own goal, the more dangerous, the more jeopardy there is. No, never more true than for goalkeepers. So it is brutal. Like, League One is different to many other situations we've been in the past, where teams, you can make that kind of mistake and you'll get away with it. It's certainly not the case now. I mean, if he somehow starts at Bolton and that kind of thing happens again, then I don't really know where you go from there, to be honest. But I guess the big concern for me is we've tried, obviously, 5 times now. We've changed that centre midfield department. Obviously, maybe a bit of rotation with busy fixtures. But can either of you now honestly tell me, you know what, like, firstly, system-wise what we should be doing, and secondly, who is supposed to be doing what, because I don't think anyone knows at the moment, and it's that's probably the biggest concern for me.
I mean, I would have said to just keep it simple and just play 4-2-3-1, which is probably their most familiar formation, with two wingers, a number 10, catch in behind Bon, Kai Kai, maybe Lancaster on the other side. I wanted to just talk about...
Can I make a point? Tom. It might be slightly flippant on what Casper said there. And there is a big caveat in here, but, you know, Casper, you mentioned we changed the midfield five times the last five games. Look at the one game we won 4-0. Who didn't start?
Yeah, that is true.
I will make the big caveat here that, you know, that is obviously against objectively the worst team that we've probably seen at League One level. But I think the point stands that, you know, the player who is costed us points left at like hand over fist now, and you know it might seem like we're digging out someone like Jordan Cousins, and that's fine. But at the moment, he is the one that's cost us points more than anybody else on the football pitch, and that's how it is. His mistake leads directly to the goal last night. His mistake leads directly to the goal against Cheltenham. His mistake leads directly to what proves to be Pompey's winner a couple of weeks ago. It's not good enough for a player of his, like you say, it's his calibre. It's what you expect of a player like that. This isn't a guy who's, you know, coming through and like worked like a part-time job on the side of part-time football. And you know, it's his first spell at this sort of level. Like, he's played hundreds of games in the league above. Like, you expect him to be able to do the basics of it. And, you know, yeah, we can talk about how he broke up play all right for the first sort of 15, 20 minutes, blah, 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 blah. But the fact of the matter is, big players, like, you know, expensive players, like, you expect them to perform in the key moments. And that's a key moment amongst many key moments where he's just simply letting this team down at the moment and letting the club down. It's not good enough. And that's why there's a lot of frustration towards him, because, you know, you expect better of a player like that, frankly. And, you know, I was talking about how slow the midfield is. Like, he's the absolute epitome of that. Like, we're talking about a 29-year-old athlete and he's got the turning circle of a tank. That's ridiculous. The performances he's putting in at the moment are so bad. Like, they're so off. And it's weird because earlier in the season, like, I think back to Pompey at home, for example. I thought he played really well in that particular game. And, you know, I think there was a role in this team for Cousins, which is just like, you know, you maybe have two eights, I guess you would say, ahead of him. And Cousins sitting sort of almost between them and the back four. And his job is just to mop it up. But, you know, for someone to do that role now, like, you need him to be kind of comfortable in possession and able to use the ball well. And he's anything but that, because, you know, we're not talking about like difficult things that you can't pull off at the moment. We're talking about just getting caught in possession. Like, you know, basically just being like really flat footed. So yeah, look, it's not good enough from him. There's other players in the squad that aren't performing as well, but yeah, it's his goals in the key, it's his mistakes rather in the key moments that are letting us down and costing us points. And that, I'm not saying if he doesn't do that, then that we go on to win the game. You know, who knows what would have happened, really? But he did do it, and we went on to lose the game. So that's kind of where we're at, and that's how we can analyse it. And I don't think that that's in any way unfair.
No, I agree. Other side of the coin is players missing the few chances that we had. I actually feel a bit bad having to talk about Lancaster, because I actually think of all the players over the past couple of games, he's had a fair amount of impact on games. Maybe the bar is a bit lower with him, and we've always talked about how he can go missing in games, but I would say against Posh and even last night, he was making himself available more than some others. Two chances fell to him, Tom. One just before half time, which Casper would have had a better view of it, but it looked like a proper good chance. One on one, he's rolled it straight at the keeper. Second one, Liam Bennett just brilliantly down the right hand side. Lancaster lifts it over the bar, around the penalty spot. These chances that he's missing, same against Bolton at home, some other examples, it's starting to become a real problem, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. And obviously Lancaster was very much someone in the crosshairs of weeks gone by. But obviously he's been replaced since. So he'll be thanking Mr. Cousins for that, I guess. But yeah, like, I think of the performances and the results that we've seen of late, like, it doesn't feel great, like, picking on Lancaster, just because I think actually, even in just terms of pure desire, I think he's the one that's showing more than anybody else, to be honest. Against Posh, like, he was noticeably leading the charge, you know, particularly early on in that game, like, pressing like a mad thing. And I think, like, he was running pretty well, I think, against Stevenage. And, you know, whenever you're talking about a player missing chances, I guess there's the two trains of thought. One is like, it's really fucking annoying because you've got the chances and basically unable to put them away. But the other is like, at least you're someone that's kind of getting in there where you look like you might do something. But obviously having dug out Cousins for like not performing the big moments, like you can't then not criticise Lancaster literally seconds later for, again, like not delivering in the key moments. I think the one that he got just before half-time, like, I almost thought the half-time whistle had gone while the ball was in the air to him. Because the way that he takes on the shot, it's like it's just tepid, like just rolls it at the goalkeeper. It's like I'm not sure he's got like the time to take a touch, but put your foot through it, man. Like just like if you catch it well on the volley, it's going to move so quickly that the keeper's going to have to do something pretty special to get anything meaningful on the end of it. And that's obviously the big one against Stevenage. There's the one that sort of flashes to him and he can't quite connect properly with that ends up on the roof of the net. But then you think back to like that one against Cheltenham at home that he has in the first half where like again like it's a similar thing where the ball comes into him in a good situation, it's just kind of like tamely shot at the goalkeeper. And the same thing against Bolton where that one frankly just has to go in the back of the net and it somehow ends up I think hit like just ricocheting off a defender because he's put it straight down the middle. Like unfortunately, like rightly or wrongly, he's in a position where he is our main creative outlet at the moment. And maybe it's one of those things where it's noticeable that he's better performing when there's someone like Lyle Taylor on the pitch, who obviously is a focal point and is someone he can aim for. But we're not really talking about that here. Like we're talking about your ability to finish chances off and, you know, whether you're a winger or an attacking midfielder or whatever description it might be, you've got to be able to add goals to your game, I think. And this is where we've obviously torn our hair out collectively over just someone like James Brophy, who's played about 3 million games and scored half a goal. And obviously Lancaster, I think, can just deliver a little bit more in that sense, to be honest. And yeah, look, the margins are pretty fine, I think, as a great man once said. And if you're missing chances, then obviously it makes everything 10 times harder for you. But I will say that, like, again, like we kind of go back to the same themes that we've talked about for a long time, because it does seem to be the same things repeating themselves. But we didn't create enough on the evening for me to come out here and just think, do you know what? Like, we're ruining missed opportunities because, you know, it was a game of few chances, to be fair, but, you know, we created very, very little.
I agree, but then those four games you've just listed that Lancaster missed big chances in, they're all games that we've lost by one goal margin. So as much as you're, you know, having a pop at, rightly so, again, having a pop at Cousins for mistakes that lead to pretty damning defeats by a goal, it's the same on the other side of the coin, right? But Let's maybe stop talking about Stevenage. Do you feel calmer, Tom?
Yeah, a little bit. Is there anything else to talk about with Stevenage, or is that everything?
Oh, sorry, I meant on the pitch.
All right. Yeah, yeah. Oh, here we go. Yes, we go.
Yeah, yeah. Let's go to the other stuff.
I'll just calm down.
From the TV, did everything? What am I asking here? How quickly did you notice that there was a flare on the pitch in the 93rd minute when we were having our only sort of half meaningful attack in added time?
Mate, it makes me laugh so much because the way people are talking about it is like we were literally about to bag the ball in the back of the net. Like,
mate,
literally,
Brophy was about to absolutely laser it off his left peg straight onto Bond's forehead.
this actually, that whole, the reaction, like it is a moment. And then the reaction to it probably sums up the entire evening, I think. Because like, it's obviously a stupid, pointless thing to do. And, you know, putting your sensible hat on, it's probably a bit of a dangerous thing to do as well, to be honest. Like, in a more serious sense, the club obviously risks sanctions for that. And also, to be honest, like, I mean, I've never been involved in any of this pyro business at any stage. But like, these are all like young lads who do enjoy watching Cambridge. You know, they're like teenagers, these guys, aren't they, generally, if we expect it's come from that unit, which I imagine it did. They just don't think through what they're doing either. Like, forget the football for a minute. Like, if you're caught on CCTV doing that, it is very likely, at best, you will not watch Cambridge United again for 3 more years. Like, you will be bad for years and years and years. And I know what you're saying, but
no, it's completely moronic, mate. Like, for all the reasons you just said, like, I'm surprised you're not going in harder on it, to be honest.
But like, no, but we need, like, ignore the football side of it for a minute. There needs to, it's about re-education with people like this as much as anything. I think there's a whole, you know, it's a set post-COVID football fan. We've certainly got our crop of them. Maybe don't understand fully what it's about, I would say, or they've created their own version of what they think going to games is. And that's fine. And in a way, it's not for me to tell anyone how to like do going to football. We've all got our own ways of going about it. But if anything you do is going to interfere with the game in any way, it's probably not a very smart thing to do. My point more is on an individual level, these people obviously enjoy coming to watch Cambridge United. They're going up and down and left and right. They're looking all over the place. Just think about, be selfish. Like, think about, you want to keep coming and watching Cambridge United, but you will not be able to if you keep doing stuff like that, because you will be caught. And it's like, even if you ignore the football side of thing or how stupid it obviously is, like, that's your years of wisdom coming through, Jules, I would say.
I don't know, mate. I think at 16, I knew not to throw a lit flare onto a pitch of footballers. Forget the fact that we were attacking for a second, which obviously at 1-0 down at Stevenage, that's just funny, right? It's so stupid, it's funny. You're right about your health and safety point. You're right. I just think you have to know better. And if you don't know better, fine, it's a re-education point, but you don't get to come to football for a while.
Yeah, that's part of the re-education process, I guess. My point is more
hundreds and hundreds of games of football where you don't see flares thrown onto the pitch during the game.
Yeah. I mean, look, it's dumb anyway. And obviously,
right, yes, into the 6-yard box as well. Like, you couldn't have placed it more perfectly to fuck up our chance, any chance that we had of scoring a goal. I mean, Caspel's absolutely right in what he says. And, you know, I think as well, like, it's a moment that it sums up the evening more than it does kind of ruins it individually, I think. Because, like, Caspel spent a lot of time taking it away from the football perspective. Just to bring it back to that, like, you know, yeah, we can sit here and blame that moment on us not getting anything out of the game or not having the opportunity to take something from the game. But the damage is kind of done by the time that happens. What I will say, though, is, like, you know, I don't know about people listening to this. I don't know about, you know, whoever it was who decided that was a good moment to throw a smoke onto the pitch. Like, I kind of feel right. Like, if in a parallel universe, I had done that, and I was at a game with one of you guys, I feel like you'd have fucking, you'd have been fuming, right? Like, you'd be fuming at me. And, like, I think a big problem with football fans is self-policing is really difficult, I think, because, like, you know, particularly if you don't know someone, or it's probably harder when you do know them, I guess, it's really hard to kind of stand up and just be like, mate, can you stop being such a dickhead just for a moment?
We've tried with you enough times,
tried
mate.
So it many times, Tom. You just don't seem to listen.
Put that on a plate.
Walk into that one, yeah.
But you know what I mean, like, and the fact is, and what we kept saying to each other when we were walking out the ground was like, that's someone's mate who's done that. And, like, I'm not just sitting here like pearl clutch about all the stuff that was going on in the corner and things like that. Like, I didn't really see what was going on. It looked like it wasn't, you know, massively sensible, but, you know, it's a bit of handbags. It's people throwing arms in the air. It's not, you know, it's not Millwall West Ham in the 80s, is it? But, like, at the same time, like, if that's your mate doing that, like, just grass the guy up because he's a total helmet.
Don't know about that, mate.
Grassing. I'm sat in a house in East London talking about grassing.
Yeah. Snitches get stitches, man. You know that.
No, but I think, I mean, there was a lot of stuff going on in the game last night. It was pretty untoward and you know, you don't necessarily want to see that. But every club's got them right. Every club's got their arseholes. And unfortunately, ours really made themselves known on what was a pretty miserable evening for the football club, I think.
Yeah. Well summed up. Let's move on to the small matter of Bolton away on Saturday.
Jesus. Leicester.
When it rains, it fucking pours. Let's get a preview. Let's start there. Jack Swinderhurst has been chatting to the Fan Zone podcast.
Right then, news fans. I'm joined by Ben from the Fan Zone podcast. Ben, thanks for joining us.
You're very welcome. It's a pleasure to be here again.
Yeah, it seems like we've spoken quite a lot in the past few weeks. A difficult time for Cambridge and Bolton. How has the last few weeks been since we saw you last?
Well, I suppose I should ask you that question and you'll probably be able to give me the same answer. All too familiar with losing to local rivals. That's been our story twice, actually. Once on Tuesday, once on Saturday. So yeah, it's not been great for the Wanderers. It's been a torrid old time. Performances haven't been where we need them to be in order to gain promotion. Not where we want them to be either, of course. So a lot is hinging on this game.
Yeah, so obviously Saturday after the Tuesday we played you was a 4-1 loss to Blackpool, and that by the sounds of it was a bad one. You did say when we spoke earlier that maybe an improved performance in the 1-0 loss against Wigan.
Difficult to pick through it really, because it's still a defeat in what was a really, really important game. But the performance was there. Everett, I think, quoted it in his post-match interview and said it was one of the best performances we've seen for a while, which it was. It was just no real urgency and cutting edge in that final third. There was a lot of good build-up, but I just didn't come to anything.
Yeah, absolutely. So you're sitting third in the table, 66 points, level 1 points with Derby and a game in hand on them, but they're ahead on goal difference. It's a stupid question for me, really, but is your aim now really to try and consolidate and get automatic promotion from here?
It has to be, yeah. We're more than capable of it. We've seen in large parts this season that we've got the talent and the mentality that it takes. It's just about now solidifying that, consolidating, but finding consistency in the business end of the season. That's going to be the real challenge. And to kick off with two Derby Day losses wasn't the best way to get that run going.
Yeah, we know that feels as well. We were speaking earlier, and it sounds like there's a few injury concerns in the Wanderers camp. Talk us through them.
Yeah, so we've not had the best of luck all season, really. Obviously, Mendes Gomez, who scored against you with a very, very nice finish, has unfortunately ruptured his Achilles and will be out for around 6 to 9 months. Dion Charles, our top goal scorer, also missing, was expected to be back for Saturday, the game against Wigan, but unfortunately, wasn't quite the case. So we've missed him. Rico Santos is thankfully back. Had his red card from Blackpool rescinded after returning from injury, so he's back, which is nice. Couple of long-term absentees in terms of George Johnstone, who obviously won't be able to make it. Dan Lunderloo as well has been out for a little while and don't think he'll be back. Nathan Baxter, our first team goalkeeper, out unfortunately, so our substitute goalkeeper Joel Comer's had to make the step up, and has done well. He's done considerably better in recent weeks. So yeah, there's a number of bodies missing from that Wanderers side, and up front we're looking pretty thin on the ground.
Yeah, it's that time of the season where people start dropping off and it's a little bit bare. So if you look at the players you have got available, how do you think Bolton will set up in this game, and kind of what sort of mindset they're going to have? Do you think Bolton are going to come out of the blocks and go for it?
I think they have to, and I think that'll be instilled in them right through training this week. I think Everett will be telling them, we have to go for it. There's been a noticeable pattern in home games where fans become very, very frustrated, and that seeps into the players, and it creates quite a hostile environment, which I think we'll be looking to steer clear from. In terms of setting up, I think it'll be Coleman in goal. Well, it has to be Coleman in goal unless Everett puts his gloves on. So yeah, Coleman in goal. The right side is a little bit contentious. Last game we saw Dacres Coghlan, Geoffin Jones on that right-hand side. I think that might be subject to change with Will Forrester possibly getting the nod. Santos and Toll will be on the other side, I would imagine. The defence is a bit misshaped with bodies coming in and out, so it'll be interesting to see who comes from that. I think the midfield is more or less set in stone. I think Sheehan will start. Thomason, I'd be surprised if he doesn't. And then possibly looking at Magoma or Kyle Dempsey. And then the front two is another good question. Well, it's not really a good question because we're very few and far between up there, but I think it will be Jon Dadibadvarsson and Victor Adebayejo to lead the line.
And yeah, it's as you say, kind of a bit sparse because of injuries. Who do you think out of those guys are going to make the difference for you on Saturday?
Now you're asking. It's a squad so full of talent. It's just recent performances have really sapped a lot of confidence, I think, from the players perhaps, but the fans as well. Josh Sheehan is a difference maker. He's absolutely unbelievable. Very, very good player in this division. So I think he'll be hopefully on top form again. And other difference makers you've got to look at. Possibly George Thomason has been sort of in and out of the team through suspension, but played relatively well against Wigan. I'm hoping that those two in the midfield will make things happen.
Absolutely. Well, you did it to me on the earlier recording. I'm going to push you for a prediction for the match. What do you think the score is going to be?
I'm half tempted to change my mind now. Just talking to you has made me even less confident than I already was. I'm going to stick with it. We'll go with 2-0 and just hope and pray it's 3 points. I couldn't care if it's 6-1, 7-2, 3-0, 1-0. Just 3 points, please.
Yeah, ditto, but the other way around. It's been a tough old season, and we seem to have had more of an influence on each other's season and more of an involvement in each other's season than we might have thought. I hope we don't have to do this again too soon. Although if it's a League One involvement, then maybe I'm not too bothered. But I wish you all the best for the rest of the season, Ben, after Saturday. And thanks for joining us.
No, thank you very much for having me, and the exact same to you. Best of luck as far away from Saturday as possible.
Thanks very much for that, Swindle. Not a daunting prospect at all, Caspel, but I've got a feeling you're going to give me some reason to be positive.
Nah.
Nope. Okay. Cool.
Nah.
Right.
I mean, they've lost their last two games, so. But the one they won before that was against us. So,
away from home. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's a bit of an unusual situation. Obviously, you don't normally play a team the reverse fixture this close together. Obviously, the weather was a big factor in that. I wondered whether they sent Lyle Taylor's red card for review because they thought Iredell might get a straight red, and that would actually mean in a weird situation he would miss the return leg, which is a really unusual way of going about your business.
Now that is 5D chess if ever you've heard it.
That would be unusual, but what's actually happened in between is Ricardo Santos got sent off for straight red, but that has been rescinded, so he will be available, which is not necessarily great news either for us.
It sort of makes it more daunting for me that they've lost the last two and they really need to win on Saturday. You could look at that either way, that the pressure's on.
Well, I mean, again, yeah, let's tease out the positives from that, which is there will be a lot of pressure on them. There will be a heavy amount of expectation on them.
Keep it nil-nil for as long as you can.
Well, I mean,
if fucking
funny
Jordan Cousins and Troy Kroos turn it on the edge of the box on half an hour and gives them a 1-0 lead, then maybe we've got half a chance.
I mean, it's this funny thing, isn't it? We've had this a few times, like, oh, don't do a double pivot in this game, but do it in this game. And we seem to be getting, like, now I sort of think, sure, like this time, pack the centre midfield. Just fill the middle of the pitch with people, with bodies. Do you know what I mean? I don't really know. It's one of those. I genuinely don't know what to suggest now when we've turned that midfield department around five times in a row. Not really sure exactly what to suggest. Do you keep changing things? Do you go back to basics? As you said, like 4-2-3-1 seems to be personnel wise, fitness wise, that seems to be like the best kind of makeup of what we're able to put together. I think, I mean, the only thing you can say optimistically, a few things. One is like normally, sometimes works when all the hope is gone is when the really weird stuff happens. And the other thing is, as off-putting as Tuesday night's performance probably was for any potential new manager, you have to hope they are about to appoint someone maybe in the stands and they're watching. Do you know what I mean? To give players a bit of a lift. It's like, look, this person is coming to game or possibly even been appointed and they're going to be watching, but it's Cor and Betsy taking charge for this one. No idea, but got to do something, right? Something has to change. So something has to change. And don't know, I'm going to go. We're going, aren't we, Tommy? It's going to be good fun.
Yeah, maybe.
I'm going to be absolutely off my face in Dublin. So that's going to be a much better place to watch the game from. Caswell, hang on. I just wanted to, before I go to Tom, to give us the reality of the situation. I just wanted to ask you for one extra positive, which you did mention, I think, on a group chat last night, which is maybe not a positive for Bolton, but extend it a tiny bit further. We might have a new man in charge Saturday. A couple of strikers coming back. Our joint top scorer's coming back. Lyle Taylor, obviously, as well in that. Is there some reason to be positive that, you know, we can get over this last little hurdle and then things could start to look a bit better in March?
Sure. Yeah. Hey. Why not?
Say it with some conviction next time, mate.
Yeah, why not? It will happen. I understand you guys are still raw off actually going to the game on Tuesday, I guess. We just have to, so we will just pick up some points somewhere. I don't know or think that will be Bolton. I got a sneaky feeling we're getting absolutely humped at Bolton away for some reason, to be honest. If I'm totally honest, but Tom's right about that set of games that follows Bolton. And I think the attitude has been a bit blasé of like, oh, Barry Corbett, so you can take these three games. We're going to lose all three anyway. And then we'll be fine because we're playing Northampton, Exeter and stuff like that. And I'm like, oh, whoever it is. And I'm like, well, I'm not sure. So I sense it won't go as well on Saturday, but you hope that we can come out of it at least with like a better performance, even like something to hang on to going into those very important run of games that we've got in March and April as well.
So to get the morale up a little bit, like I was thinking about this. Like, we've been doubled by Posh, Stevenage and Orient, potentially Northampton in a week. All of our local games, basically. I think that goes some way to how people feel about this squad and how people are feeling in general. How fan base feels connected to a squad or not.
Look, I mean, we've got one more big chip to play, it feels like, this season, basically, which is new manager.
Yeah.
That's it. That's the chip. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'd say it's probably extremely unlikely, albeit we could still sign, obviously, someone on a free transfer. Get Wes back. Get him back.
Just do it.
Get Barry registered. Like, do something. That's proper bingo card business, this is.
That's beyond bingo card.
We've got one big chip. I think it's likely we won't have hired someone before, obviously, Saturday in Bolton. So it's realistic to expect. Like, you can probably plot out the scenes of events is that we probably will go to Bolton and lose, if you're being realistic, unfortunately. We'll probably have a new manager in place either around it or by Monday, Tuesday. You'd expect they'll be looking to announce someone because they simply have to, because we cannot go into that Northampton game without a new manager, is what I would say. That just simply can't happen. And that is like, we're getting a bit, 11 games left after Bolton? Getting a bit of like 35 games played, 38 points on the board, and some very, very big games coming in March. So, yeah, maybe Reading will get, maybe they'll lose like 10 more points. Yeah, I think we might need it at this point.
We can hope, can't we? Tom, I'll give you the last say. Any way that you think we might set up, you'd like to see us set up? Maybe one positive is we could repeat last season's result up there. A 1-1 draw. You'd take that, wouldn't you, mate?
I would love that. I would bite your hand off for that. How do we set up? It'll probably look something similar to what we did on Tuesday. Probably look something in between Tuesday and Saturday. I mean, I find it very hard to be positive about a game away at Bolton, to be honest, having seen what I've seen in the last few weeks. If the same problems repeat themselves, we will get absolutely taken apart. Because it's been a little while since we've had one of them as well. So yeah,
maybe we're due one.
Or maybe we're actually due a good performance. Who knows? We'll have to see. For me, not loads to say on Bolton, that hasn't been said already. They're a good team. They were in the Premier League a little while ago. They get lots of fans at home. These are things that haven't typically boded very well for us when we've gone away to bigger clubs in our time in League One. Go out there, try and make a bit of a game of it, but I haven't got much hope that we're going to take anything from the game. So if you're looking for that, you'll be disappointed. But yeah, you never know. You never know, do you? And it kind of feels like this is like, get this one out of the way and then we can really start the season again.
Season starts, yeah.
Having said that, the list of managers that we are looking at apparently is rather less glamorous than what it was before. I don't know how much time you want to spend speculating on who's going to come in, but the names that have come out while we've been recording this have been less than appealing. But yeah, anyway.
Go on.
Andy Woodman.
I actually don't know who that is.
He's the Bromley manager, mate. Show some respect.
Cool, man.
I think he's also a plasterer on the side.
That's going to age really well if we do hire him, mate.
Okay.
UTAS meets. Yeah. Sorry, you missed a bit there, mate.
Lads, no, you can't do another UTAS meets with a new manager until they've been in the job at least
3 years.
Like 3 months.
Yeah, absolutely.
No, it's probably not that useful to speculate about it just yet. But I think the point that the wider point I'm making is that give it a go against Bolton. Show some pride, at least, some professional pride, if nothing else, even if you really don't care about the football club. We just got to go again when there's someone new in, and hopefully that one works out.
Okay, look, let's wrap this up. Good luck to anyone making the trip up. Fair play to you two. Before we go, we've got our monthly roundup of the Cambridge United women's team. February has been a very big month for the women's team. So to take you through everything that's happened, here's Adam Tarasevich.
Cambridge United Cup finalists, how about that? In spite of 3 league games, 15 goals shared between them in February, there's no escaping that this was the biggest game, the biggest result for quite some time for Cambridge United. So this month's roundup is mostly going to be the story of how Cambridge overcame a strong Barnsley team in the National League Plate semi-final. A Barnsley team who are pushing for promotion in their own league, the Northern Division, in the fourth tier. But goals from Rachel Kosky, Bella Simmons and Ruth Fox gave United the win and sent them to their first National Cup final, having never even reached the semi-final of this tournament before. Cambridge took the lead early in the 6th minute. It was a free kick in the middle of the park, won well, played into the box and flicked home by Kosky, who had made her way forward. It went over the keeper's head and Cambridge took an early lead, only to be cancelled out soon after by Barnsley. Their left winger particularly was really dangerous throughout. She drove the ball low into the box and at the second attempt, it was turned in. Throughout a lot of the match, Barnsley dominated possession. United had to make the most of the times they were able to break, and they did exactly that. Zoe Wood and Alicia Stoker down provided creative outlets in the middle. Marden and Simmons were the wingers. In transition, Stoiko Down found Simmons. She surged into the area, finished low past the keeper to make it 2-1 in the second half. For the third, Wood was the provider. Breaking down the left, she had the awareness to square the ball for Ruth Fox, who'd only come on as a substitute a few minutes earlier. She controlled, finished well, and put the game really out of Barnsley's reach. Even if a late goal in stoppage time did make the score a bit of a more nervy 3-2. And post-game, Darren Marjoram almost seemed apologetic for the quality of the match. While it was nervy, cagey at times, I think it made for a really interesting tactical battle. Cambridge, they pit their fights really well. They weren't going to compete in a passing match with Barnsley, but they're fantastic at countering them. And all in all, this was a thoroughly deserved victory in front of 407 fans, which is a great crowd for the regular ground in St Neots. As for a player of the match, Darren Gillam has a fantastic blog, Women's Football East. He picked out Sammy Edgar for just tenacity in midfield, which didn't fade for 1 minute of the game. But I'd also want to add Lauren Webb, who kept United in the game during periods of Barnsley pressure, particularly in the first half. She made one excellent save in particular to keep a free kick out of the top corner. But another who deserves mention is Zoe Wood. Showed real quality and calmness in the midfield, assisted the final goal with great awareness, but was really effective in helping United see the game out as well, with her skill running to the corner and just holding off players. Really, though, the whole team performed admirably and will be playing Derby County in the final on the 21st of April. Of course, there have been 3 other games to talk about in the league. On the way back at the beginning of the month, Cambridge travelled to Plough Lane. They played at AFC Wimbledon. If I'm being optimistic, probably the only team that have gotten the better of Cambridge this season properly. But they did it again. Once again, they won by 6 goals. Only this time they got kept a clean sheet as well. 6-0 it finished. Enough said. Following that, there were 2 more positive results, though. Firstly, a 5-1 victory over Actonians. Story of the first half, it was relatively positive for United until they fell behind just before half-time. An equaliser early in the second, and then a quick red card and a penalty that was dispatched by Ruth Fox gave United the lead. And against 10, they scored another three before full time, including the debut goal from Abby Smith, who's just joined on loan from Ipswich for the rest of the season. And three wins from three against Actonians this year is pretty good revenge after they beat United at the Abbey to finish last season. Finally, in midweek leading up to Sunday's game, a rotated United squad beat AFC Sudbury 2-1. Start was given to Kieran Markwell in goal in place of Lauren Webb, who's been pretty much ever present this season. Charlotte Gillies and Bella Simmons scored either side of the half, either side of a Sudbury goal from a corner as well, to give Cambridge the win. They're now comfortably in the top half, and they have a few teams to shoot at as well above them by just a couple of points. A National Cup final awaits, though. As I said, Derby are the opponents. They beat Exeter in the other semi-final. It'll be a couple of months till I get to talk about that, though, and there are four more league games in March, starting with a trip to QPR, one of the teams just above United, but they have two more home games for people to go to. One, a midweek game on the 14th, and on Sunday the 24th as well. Both will be at St Neots Town. And whether you've supported the team before or this would be your first time, it would be really great to get as much support behind the team as possible, and hopefully follow on from what was an amazingly good crowd on Sunday.
If you're listening to this, you'll be subscribed to Under the Abbey Stand wherever you get your podcasts. We did put out an interview with a manager. Maybe Gary Brabin wants it. Imagine that. What a turn of events that is. George first curses Neil Harris with our UTAS meets of him, and then he hires Gary Brabin with his UTAS meets with him. But do go and listen to that. It's a brilliant throwback to that one brilliant season that also ended in disaster at Wembley. But that's a great interview. So do go and check that out and subscribe wherever you get your pods. Thanks very much, boys, and we'll be back soon.